Alrighty, so hello, this is Emily Running. I am the founder and director of DanceWire in Portland, Oregon. I am here with Linda Austin. It's November 20th, 2017, and we're going to talk about her life and career as part of the DanceWire Artist Stories Ambassador Series. So welcome, Linda.
Hi.
Hi. just to get started, can you give me an overview of your current titles?
Yeah. Well, I'm the founder and the artistic and executive director of Performance Works Northwest, which is where we are right now, and a choreographer and performer.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, we're just going to jump right into some things. So when did you start dancing, and can you give just a brief overview of your dance history or your progression through?
Well, talk about, you mentioned imposter syndrome earlier, and of course everybody deals with that in some way, but I maybe sometimes more especially because I started dancing really late in my 20s.
Okay.
With a background in theater that was physical based, so I had physical training, and I always when I moved to New York, I thought I was going to be a writer, and then I just ended up taking these movement workshops and fell into dance. You know, people started asking me to be in their work even though I didn't have training, because I was in this scene where people were experimenting with different types of bodies and, you know, being more inclusive or looking for a more natural look in the downtown New York dance scene of the 80s. And I started going to the studio and making my own work because I always knew I wanted to create and not just be a body in someone else's work. I mean, I think being a dancer is being an artist as well, but I always had this urge to create and... Somebody very, very early on asked me if I wanted a gig.
Okay.
You know, like he was curating a dance series at a place with a professional lighting designer and a small fee of $100. And, you know, everything taken care of, like very cushy, of people who had never made a dance before.
Okay.
So that was his, he was on the board of this dance organization and decided to do that. So that was, that set me going. And along the way, I got a little more technique, you know, very eclectic dance training, but was always making my own work from the beginning and kind of mostly stopped being in other people's work, you know, after a few years of that. And then I've been making dances that sort of shade into a kind of performance art, as well. I mean... I call everything I do dance, but it has a lot of elements that aren't dance.
Sure. Yeah. I want to backtrack for a second, and you are not the first person to say, I came to dance late. What would be the normal time?
Five. Or college, even. I mean, I didn't study it in college. It was after college.
Right, and I think that's interesting because... a follow-up question. Why do you think that is? Like, why does it seem like five or early, you know, early on in life is the appropriate age to start dance?
Well, I mean, I think it, you know, there are some ways I'm glad I didn't start, that I came with this fresh view of everything and didn't have to, like, overcome, like, how a dancer's body should look, how much of a turnout should you have, those kind of questions, like, were you, but I don't know, I guess it's a ballet history thing, is that why?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm just curious because, again, when you're looking at various different styles of dance, I think some, ballet or just more...
And as a kid, I wanted it.
Jazz, tap. Yeah, maybe you start then, but... It isn't necessary, and I was just curious to see if your answer would be anything about, you know, when you do start young. I did start when I was five, and I absolutely was, like, afraid that at 30, I would need to be retired. I mean, and so it's curious, like, if you start at age 20 or if you start later... Do you have that same fear that that you're going to have to retire immediately, or is it just a totally different experience?
Yeah, I didn't. think that way. I mean, I created my first dance when I was 28. That I was 27, 28. And I thought I'd have a long... I mean, it's for me, it's always been about the making, but always performing as well. So I still haven't stopped, and I'm 64. And
totally. Yeah, exactly. We're going to shatter this myth, right? Yeah, so I find it interesting that, yeah, a couple of people that I've been talking to have said I started so late, but I am really curious about that experience of starting late and why it feels late and maybe it isn't so bad.
And I mean, if I was interested in being a ballet dancer, of course, it would be different, but
Yeah, but you don't have to be.
Yeah, no.
We all don't have to be ballerinas.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well... another just kind of big question, but what does dance mean to you or has meant to you in your life? And that could be at a specific point in your life it really had meaning or, you know, just overall.
Well, there's this real personal level of just physical need to do it. And it's funny to think back to when that wasn't true, you know. It becomes sort of habituated in your body that you have to move. And move in a way that's kind of non-utilitarian or non-goal-oriented. Like, I have to run faster, you know, past this, like, goal of, you know, how fast you can run kind of stuff. But that's just more...
I always think of it as, like, two-dimensional versus three-dimensional. Because, like, two-dimensional is super repetitive running.
You're just
you're kind of going back and forth in the same strokes.
Right.
Or whatever it is, and to me, dance is so different because of how many different angles and and if anybody, unfortunately, the people listening can't see our conversation, the gestures and the we can't help ourselves.
But even compared to something like gymnastics that uses the whole body, but there's these like benchmarks that you have to meet. Whereas in dance, you have the freedom
that
it can
of
be small, it can be big, you know, subtle to grandiose and.
Cool. Absolutely.
And so personally, just the need to do that as a person, even if I wasn't performing. And then I've always wanted, since I was little, to be making stuff, you know, either for, like, artistically painting or writing or something. So then the form that I'm using now is my body and, you know, other things as well, text and music and visual elements,
Do you find that the toolbox of creativity crosses over to painting and dance and writing, and do you feel like that the way to create as well as the way to critique a creation? Do you feel like that's pretty similar across the different genres?
There's specificities of each one. Like, I fall into everything that I do is under the umbrella of dance, but when I'm making something, a performance, or at least performance, you know, when I'm making something, I'm not thinking about what it is or what genre it falls into. I'm just pulling from tools or things, like I said, you know, maybe video or objects or movement, you know, like all those things as part of the overall composition.
So what are some of the main challenges that you faced in your pursuit of dance?
Starting late. I mean, in a way, I mean, even going back to saying, well, sometimes I may be glad that I didn't start so early, but there sometimes I wish I had a little more technical chops than I do. On the other hand, I haven't worn my body out by doing a lot of repetitive, hardcore technique every day. I mean, I guess it's both good and bad, that repetition on your body. And, you know, as a maker of dance, just finding venues, funders, being able to pay... people, being able to pay myself, which is recent-ish, in the last 5-10 years. A lot of times my projects, I would go into the hole financially, whereas the dancers were getting some financial recompense.
Who do you feel like there's kind of a hierarchy of who gets paid in a dance production, like lighting and front of house manager and
the
dancers
tech people
and
always
choreographer.
Get paid.
Because
I guess they wouldn't be doing it, but the crazy dancers, you know, I've
always wondered why that is, though.
Yeah,
because dancers spend 4 months rehearsing, creating, you know, multiple times a week, getting together to create a production, and then the technical people that come in the week of end up getting paid.
Yeah.
First.
Yeah.
I've always wondered about that.
Yeah. And of course I'm married to a lighting designer and he makes much more than I do.
Yeah.
And he's working constantly
right.
at it.
And it's not to devalue their work either, but I just wonder why the assumption is the way it is.
Yeah. I guess it's, often the tech people are actually making a living from it. So they're not doing the day job tech. I mean, some of them are, but I don't know.
I don't think there's an answer, actually.
Yes, there's a number of factors,
Sure. So what kind of resources, people, or opportunities do you feel like have helped you the most?
Well, that very first dance gig that I talked about, which is at Dance Based Project in New York, that was like a nice push, you know, like lift up.
How long had you been dancing at that time?
A couple years.
Okay, so it was kind of... Yeah, because you were supposed to be new, right? Yeah, to
yeah, somebody
that
who was...
The
well, at least,
theme
I mean,
of the production.
You could be, you could be a trained, you know, a well-experienced dancer, but you couldn't have made your own choreography.
Made your own work before,
So, and it's interesting to think back on the six people that were part of that like little mini festival of who is still making work, and I think I might be the only one who's choreographing.
Yeah.
One of us became a singer in Berlin.
Okay.
Yeah, and the other, a couple I've lost track of.
Sure.
Yeah.
Cool.
What was the question?
Any other resources?
Oh
people,
opportunities. So just I feel like being able to meet so many creative people early on in the 80s when I was in downtown New York and just feel that network of ideas and influences and openness to ideas and being in each other's work. I feel like from my peers I've got... And then again when I came to Portland as well.
Sure.
Yeah.
Since DanceWire is trying to create a network that keeps people inspired, right?
Yeah.
How, describe more, can you talk just more about that experience and even the details of it? Like, was it regular interactions with people? Was it, was it knowing that a lot was going on? Was it a general kind of acceptance of a lifestyle? I don't know. Like, what about that network in New York did, like, was really influential or impactful?
Well, one thing that was timing-wise was when I came on the scene, there was kind of a little downtown, they called it the downtown dance scene, and some of the institutions were young at the time as well, so there felt like there was maybe more access. Everybody was doing it together. There wasn't such a separation between the, you know, like a big hierarchy. You know, at PS122, I think, for example, which is a longstanding venue that is just reopening after a major, major renovation that took years. I remember when they hired their first person who was part-time, you know, like it was just a space that people were using and then it became this nonprofit and so on. But so it was the idea that everything was kind of growing up together. People were seeing each other's work. I mean, it's kind of like it still is among young people now, you know, stuff in galleries, non-traditional spaces.
There's kind of a bond of being in it together.
And, you know, rent was still pretty cheap.
Hard to believe.
Even in the East Village. And so yeah. that allowed for, you know, people to be able to have time to, you know, go to things and make
just
stuff and
be
see
involved.
Things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. So do you have an artist statement and or longer term vision of what you hope to accomplish through your work?
Well, I probably alluded to some of it in the sense that I said I kind of use the umbrella of dance to encompass all my performances, even though some of them look more dancey than others. And I feel like a through line is that I don't have a through. I mean, I do. I definitely have a through line, but I feel like I have these contradictory impulses, and sometimes one of them takes the forefront more than the other. They're sort of always like, oh, I like more minimal, or I like things really messy, or that kind of thing. And that I'm trying to... I like people to have a fresh view of the body through my work.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Or to be able to see, like, all kinds of movement as dance, whether it's traditionally virtuosic or not, you know,
sure.
the whole range. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. That's cool. So how would you describe the difference between the current dance scene in Portland and what it was like when you moved here? And just say when you moved here so we have a reference point.
Yeah, I came back to Portland after... Well, I finished college in 76, was gone, and came back in, like, 98. So 98 is when my introduction to the Portland dance scene. And it's now much more... There's much more happening.
Mm-hmm.
I think... You know, Body Vox started kind of shortly after I came here. In terms of, like, you know, established companies, we didn't have Northwest Dance Project, we didn't have Body Vox. And then as far as the more kind of independent choreographers, and we didn't have Headwaters with Mizu, you know, we didn't have Performance Works, which is MySpace.
You didn't have White Bird.
We didn't have White Bird.
Yeah.
Yeah. What, it, all, a lot of that started kind of right after I moved here. I think I remember the first time they did a... Paul and Walter did a production, and then, So that all kind of, so a lot has happened. Conduit was the first place I went. I lived a few blocks away when I first moved here.
From
and
Conduit?
So, yeah, from Conduit downtown. And and Jeff introduced me to Mary Osland, Linda Johnson, and the founders of Conduit. So that was kind of an initial home, although within a year or two I got this space.
Okay.
Yeah. Pretty early on. There's a lot more activity in both sort of a like more sustainable established level, like with, you know, companies and producers. Pika already existed and was producing, they didn't have the TBA festival, but they would bring in dance as a season. Just a lot more activity on all levels, and I feel like I used to kind of know who all the players were, and now I don't, because, I mean, first of all, you get older, and the younger people keep coming up, and you can't always keep track of them, but also just in terms of people moving here and starting to do stuff, it's just much bigger and more, a larger variety of aesthetics, I think, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Any kind of just vibe or tone? I think in the places that I've lived, there's definitely there's been a different vibe and tone for each city. What do you think?
Well, I've only lived here in New York and Mexico. And of course, Mexico, I was kind of a, you know, foreigner, so didn't... You know, I don't know how to answer that. I feel like people are pretty supportive, even though I feel like we're kind of scattered. And just because of the way the city is growing, you know, we're all we're becoming more far-flung into the outer, you know, like now there's sure. the place down in Oregon, no,
Milwaukee. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that's really far. I used to think I was far
from
the center of Portland, you know, and in North Portland, you know, like Flock and Disjecta and Headwaters way up there
absolutely.
And me way down here and nothing, in, I mean, not nothing. I mean, Conduit's gone from the center of town in terms of my own milieu. So kind of scattered, but still supportive of each other. And, openness.
Yes.
Yeah.
What was kind of your goal for this space? So you said you got this space quite a long time ago, and was it more personal for you to create work? Did you have the vision of presenting dancers and the residencies that you do now?
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm sure that it's progressed, but what was kind of your original plan?
I had a plan. Okay. This is crazy, and maybe it doesn't belong here, but I bought an apartment in New York for $2,000 in 1978.
Yeah.
And when I was thinking about moving, it was maybe worth $90,000. And so that's how the space came to be.
Okay.
But I, you know, I was thinking, I want to live in a space where I have a space to dance. So that was my thing. And so I started thinking about going back to Oregon because I knew that money wouldn't be enough for New York.
Right.
And at the same time, I re-met Jeff Forbes, who I'd known in college, and we started cross-country dating. So that pushed me over here. And with my idea was that I was going to find a place where I could have a live-work space and have space to dance. And in my mind, I was going, and I'm not going to become an artist administrator. I'm not going to become an artist administrator. But then as soon as I had the space, I felt like I wanted other things to happen here.
Mm-hmm.
So I started with an improv series and a cabaret, and it just sort of grew from there.
Yeah.
And there have been a couple times when I was going to, like, pull back. Like, I was going to pull back and not do, maybe just do the residencies, but no other, like, events. And then we got a surprise grant for the organization.
Oh, okay.
So I felt like I had to step up and, you know, use that. Yeah.
Yeah. So what is the long-term plan or the next 5 or 10 years plan? Maybe 10 years for this space particularly.
Yeah. It's something I'm going back and forth on because there's a time when I'm going to want to pull back from administering. So we're kind of trying to get a little bit into succession planning, you know. And
which
that,
is weird,
I
right?
know.
Like, because as an artist, as somebody who created it based on a personal vision.
Right.
How does somebody else take that over?
Yeah.
Or do they? Or
yeah.
is that necessary, or do you want them to? Or
yeah, I mean, it's funny, because I kept having this, I was at this retreat of that surprise grant. There was a convening of all the people who got it. It was from the Rauschenberg Foundation, and we had this convening, and all the people from all over the world, and we were giving each other advice in these, like, little groups, and I was talking about wanting, you know, like, the future, and somebody pointed out that even if we dissolved, there was still an influence. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, even if it goes away,
right,
there was still
right.
an impact.
It was still, yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. So that made me
true.
Feel better, because I was like, how's it going to, you know, like, since it came from me personally, and there's not really that much money, you know, to pay in a position, how's that going to happen? But we're still trying to figure that out.
I'm sure it'll come to you. Organically.
Well, it all has.
Yeah, right.
Organically.
So if you were to paint a picture of your ideal of the Portland dance scene in 10 years, what would you hope that it looks like?
Like today, but with more support for everybody who's doing everything. And more stability for some of the spaces so that we don't keep losing spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be lovely to have, I mean, everybody has their own ideal theater and what size it would be. I would like a 150 seat theater with all the technical, support that a bigger stage would have, but for a smaller size audience that could be more intimate, or even 100 seat, that I don't think we have anything like that. I mean, around.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be nice to have another space and affordable. I mean, yeah, most people have to independently produce. So, yeah. So, yeah, I would like to see everybody keep on doing what they're doing, but with more support. And I also feel like I don't know what the city can do or what the... I feel like one of the biggest things that could help the dance or any artistic community is for the rents to go down, you know. Because
mm-hmm.
otherwise everyone's going to move away.
Right,
you know?
Or be somehow like subsidized.
Yeah.
For a specific like nonprofit or arts ventures or something like that, maybe.
Yeah.
Is there a surprise question? Is there anything the Dance Wire can do?
I don't know. Advocate. I don't know. I think having it as a resource to connect is a great thing.
I feel like we're working on the visibility, as visibility is power. So if people mm-hmm. are able to see the variety of things going on out there, and if people are able to learn about something that they may have never mm-hmm. known about mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. does strike their interest, mm-hmm. That's kind of just where we're currently at, is just showing, revealing mm-hmm. everything that's going on mm-hmm. here. And mm-hmm. then, I'm not sure what happens next, but again, happens organically, but for right now, like, our real focus is just demonstrating that there is a lot going on mm. here, and there's a lot of quality work going on, and there's people that have been in this community forever, or have been dancing forever, that are doing really amazing things, and just getting that to mm-hmm. to be mm-hmm. visible by the public, and then we'll see what happens.
Mm.
But that's mm-hmm. kind of the current focus, and the advocacy piece is interesting because, I think that there's a place for that, and it's me part-time right now, and so, again, it's that resources, like, mm-hmm. How else can there be support for... Mm-hmm. for things that move forward, mm. but yeah.
Have you ever thought about becoming like a fiscal conduit for
maybe
people?
Yeah, it's an idea. Again,
I looked into that at one point and decided it was too much work, but it could also be an income stream with a little percentage, or like a membership model that people usually do, like Fractured Atlas. Or
right, and more and more, I get, I can't even tell you how many small dance companies call me and say, what do I do? How do I get my nonprofit? And I say, first consider whether that's the right move. I don't know that it is. And then, ongoing discussion happens. And I think that there are so many small level companies here. And half of our membership right now, just to give an idea, is an annual budget of $10,000 or less.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
That's the level, how small these companies are, is it's really founders, artistic directors pulling out of their own pocket and their own friends and family network to say, can you help us put this on?
Mm.
And so, companies like that are saying, should we get our 501c3? And it's like, well... is there another way? So
I mean, somebody, I can't remember who it was saying, if I was doing it today, unless I was doing other services like presenting or something like that, and I was just doing my own work, I would stay and use the fiscal umbrella.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I wish that Portland did have something like that for artists, because Fractured Atlas is who I refer everyone to. And it's a great, that's how DanceWire got started. I wasn't even sure if I wanted, mm-hmm. if we wanted that to be a 501c3. And so we started there and then said, we'll give it a year and see how our business model evolves and if that's the right move for us. And
mm-hmm.
it turned out that it was. But I think that that is something that will be awesome here. And maybe when we listen back in 10 years, will be a fiscal sponsor for artists.
Yeah, because I feel
locally.
I think one of maybe the disadvantages of Fractured Atlas is that there might be some, because it's not local.
That is, that's the primary disadvantage.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it feels like really, really solid and helpful. So, Well, anything else that you would like to share?
No.
we talked about it all.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time.
And, yeah.